Hi there, my name is Mary Killalea. Welcome to the To Be Bolder podcast, providing career insights for the next generation of women in business and tech. To Be Bolder was created out of my love for technology and marketing, my desire to bring together like-minded women, and my hope to be a great role model and source of inspiration for my two girls and other young women like you. Encouraging you guys to show up and to be bolder and to know that anything you guys dream of, it's totally possible. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the conversation. Hi there. I am super excited about today's show. My guest is Pam Dinder. Pam is a content marketing leader, author, and speaker. Her background is deeply rooted in marketing, previously working at Intel as global integrated marketing strategist, where she led their product launches and worldwide marketing campaigns. Today, she travels all over the globe, educating organizations on ways to better market and increase sales. She's written three top-selling books, Effective Sales Enablement, Global Content Marketing, and The Modern AI Marketer. Pam, thank you so much for being here.
Yay! Thank you so much for inviting me, Mary.
Yeah, I love it. I love it. And so today's topic I am passionate about. I love, you know, campaigns, content strategy, and I could talk to you about this all day long. So let's just dive in with my first question. What is it about marketing that you love?
I think the one I like the most is doing messaging and also value proposition. I know that sounds so boring, right? I mean, who wants to do that kind of stuff? Everybody was like, why don't you just pick creative? That's actually more fun, you know? And yeah, the thing I like the most is actually probably the foundation of the marketing is mm-hmm. you need to get your value proposition. You need to get your messaging right. And from my perspective, if you cannot get that part of it right, and nothing else matters. And because the copy depends on it and the creative development depends on it. You know, every aspect of a marketing outreach depends on your value propositions and also your messaging. And from my perspective, to get that one right is very, very critical. But what I also have discovered that not many companies spend a lot of time on the messaging framework and also the value proposition. They tend to spend more time on the creative because right. that's something that we like to do and we like to evaluate. But from my perspective, you know, nowadays, many companies offer similar products. And the way that to actually get yourself differentiate is actually spend some time understand what is your unique value proposition. How does what can you say either by salespeople or the marketing people that it's very different and unique about your product? And I think spending time on that is very critical.
Well, it is critical, and it's challenging because most of the time you have to do it in big organizations and you have many, many different stakeholders who have many, many different agendas that they're trying to get across in this, you know, micro messaging.
I know. I totally understand. I mean, you and I both work in a big company, so we kind of understand, you know, it's kind of difficult. I do agree with you on the smaller company or the growing company or your product is not sophisticated. Not sophisticated, that's the wrong word. It's not complex or complicated, then I think the value proposition is probably easy to define. And you are totally right. In the big organization, usually there are many cooks in the kitchen and many people need to approve that. And that's substantially difficult in terms of getting your messaging to the point that if you have a specific vision, you know, that you want to talk about, you want to convey, it's very hard to get like many people to agree. In a lot of situations like that in the past, what we have done or what I had done is actually working with a marketing research team. And we do, you know, sometimes depending on the scale, smaller scale of focus group testing or A-B testing to actually test what actually works and use the data to convince the internal stakeholders that certain messaging actually works. I mean, that's not necessarily the case. You know, I wouldn't say that I won every single battle, you know, even with that research. But a lot of time you can have that information and have a conversation, if nothing else, productive conversation with the internal stakeholders and to get their approvals.
Yeah, no, that's great information. So tell us how you got started on this journey.
Marketing or?
Yes. Well, and how you got started in marketing and then how you ended up like now traveling the world, talking to people about, you know, their organizations and, you know, doing marketing and sales for them. So.
Yeah. Interesting enough, I was a CPA.
Oh, I didn't know that. Really?
Yeah. I actually passed the CPA exam and I was a corporate auditor for KPMG PMAWIC, actually for 2.5 years. And I found that that's actually not my calling. I did that for like 2 years. I was like, oh, you know what? That's enough. I don't think I can deal with numbers anymore. And then to be honest with you, I didn't know what I wanted to be or what I want to do when I, you know, when I grow up. And I know that is not something about finance and accounting, even though I did that and I started and I that was my major when I was in college. So I moved to training actually. So I was doing training for a consulting firm. And I also did a lot of project management. I like that part of it because it's very much operations. And I always consider myself an operations type of person, to be honest. Mm. And then I joined Intel about 19 years ago. And Intel at that time actually encouraged people to move around. And I was on the manufacturing floor for several years. I was doing product marketing. I was doing project management. I was doing operations. I was moving around. And marketing was never like part of my career development. I don't even consider myself a good marketer. And
oh,
I was
come
like,
on.
Come on. You see, I'm not kidding. So, and it's like the marketing is really a twist of fate for me. And a manager I have worked for a long period of time, and he moved to managing a massive event called Intel Developer Forum. And that was actually a very, very big event, I would say 10, 15 years ago, and eventually expanded to, you know, like Nairo shows and then, One Master flagship event. And they need somebody to actually do the operation side of it. And then Rob basically said, do you want to do that? I was like, yeah, sure, no problem, I can do that. So I started doing the event operations. And then again, twist of fate. It's seriously twist of fate. And also, you know, working at big corporation, there's multiple different reorgs, right? So after IDF, I somehow got reorg into kind of like a marketing strategy team. The VP of the marketing at that time basically said, you had done event marketing for about 4 years. What do you want to do next? I was like, I don't know. You know, what's going on in marketing organization? I'm not so sure. And I'm not kidding. Seriously, I was kind of like a dumbass. Anyway, and then Nancy was like, hey, are you interested in doing kind of like an enterprise and a B2B strategy? And I was like, really? Marketing strategy? I'm like ops girl, like through and through. And so the first year doing the marketing strategy, I was responsible, literally global go-to-market plan, the enterprise part of it for Intel. My God, I was struggling the first year. And but after that ramp, and I started getting very, you know, I got challenged, seriously, working in a big corporation. If you don't have, if you don't know what you're doing, you get challenged all the time. My God, the first year I got challenged for my presentation, my global go-to-market plan, every single slide got challenged. That was hard, okay?
Yeah, no, it's unnerving, yes.
And then, but I slowly learned my rope and I got to exactly what needs to be done and what are some of the strategic element that needs to be included as a part of go-to-market plan. I also have a lot of mentors that actually helped me out along the way. And so to make that transition a whole lot easier, but it still was very difficult. And then ultimately I ended up doing the global go-to-market plan for about 6 or 7 years. And working very closely with the product team and, you know, direct and indirect sales force and various marketing functions from pay media, social media, messaging, events, because all those elements needs to be incorporated into the global go-to-market plan that So in a way that you can provide guidance to geographies. So it was a great experience, and that somehow led to the inception of my first book, because I was in a global role for a long period of time, and Intel was a global company. I ended up working with, you know, I was headquarters, and I'm working very closely with geographies. And we have a specific process that we follow over a period of time in terms of how that the corporate and the geographies work together. And I created my own framework, or, you know, crystallized a certain concept. And I used that to write my first book, which is How to Scale Content Across Regions. So that's my journey. It's like twist of fate, seriously.
Well, and I love it. I think it's great. And I do know that Intel encourages people to do different roles. And at first, looking on the outside, I always thought that is the bizarrest thing I've ever thought. But once you get in there and you see the value of understanding all the different roles and responsibilities and how they work together and what the needs are, it makes a lot of sense.
Less sense, yeah.
Yeah, and it really makes well-rounded employees, which I think
yes.
is great.
You know, I was able to actually stand on my own feet, especially in the past 6 years, and working with other enterprise companies that had a lot to do with the experience at Intel.
Yeah.
Because I have worked multiple different jobs, so I can actually think very holistically. You know, I've done operations, I've done manufacturing, I've done project management, and I have done product developments, and on top of it, you know, marketing. And then supporting sales, get myself yelled at multiple times in the past. Supporting sales is really not like, you know, I would say a very pleasant job. But I enjoyed it so much because I learned a lot, actually, on the sales side. And that also helped me to write the second book. Anyway, so that's that.
Yeah, and the second book is Effective Sales Enablement, right?
Yes, exactly. It's really how to support and how to enable sales as a marketer. You know, as a B2B marketers, a lot of time we have to quantify our ROI and also our contribution to sales, not just to the brand, but in the campaigns. It's basically, can you quantify your impact to sales? So I had a chance and opportunities actually working with the direct sales force and also working very closely with Intel's co-marketing team. Intel has a huge co-marketing team that actually co-market with many key accounts, right? You probably are aware of it, HP, Amazon, and everybody else.
Yeah. So I think one thing that while I heard you saying all those various roles is you never seemed intimidated or afraid of the new roles that were brought to you. That you were really just eager to embrace them, or you just didn't, you said, sure, I'll do it. And then you figured out a way to do it. What do you think is ingrained in you that makes you do that?
When I was working in the corporate world, and a lot of time, I happened to work with many great managers. I have to tell you, Mary, I've been very, very lucky. And a lot of time, the managers, they challenge you, right? They basically said, hey, you know what? You've done this. Do you want to take on additional scope? Or, hey, you have done this. Do you want to take on, you know, a different jobs? And for a long time, I kind of just feel like, oh, you know what? Let me just be a team player. And obviously, you know, the team needed some sort of support over there, and we have a gap. Let me just go there and figure it out. And you are totally right. I did not know marketing. When I started, swear to God, the first question I asked, I mean, I went to a meeting. They kept talking about copy, copy, copy. You know, the copy is not great. And I walk out of the meeting, and I ask one person who is like a creative director. And I say, what is copy? And he looked at me, and he almost pass out. It's like, you are doing the strategy for us and you are asking me what copy is? Oh my God, we are doomed this whole year. It's like, we are like, all right, this girl just doesn't know jack shit. Anyway, I apologize. I curse.
No, you're
fine. And so, but But I look at his face, I say, oh my God, you know, I have to get myself ramped very quickly. And so to answer your question, I think I just find a way to embrace it. And kind of like, I was not afraid because I know within that environment, I can find help. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It's different than like I'm working for myself right now. Yeah. Like if I don't know anything, I was like, oh my God, what should I do? Where can I get help? Right. But in the corporate environment, one of the biggest advantage is if you've been with that company long enough, you know where to go to ask for help, right?
Yeah.
So I know that I was not alone. So I was not afraid per se. It's just a matter of like, how fast can I ramp?
Right.
You know, so.
No, that's great. And I think it's key too, to be willing to ask and not be afraid to not have the answer. So many people think, oh God, I can't ask that. I'm already supposed to know that. You know, you just have to raise your hand and say,
he
I don't know.
Ask. Oh my, I ask a lot of many dumb questions. Initially.
No, never a dumb question. You know that. So marketing's changed so much over the last decade and continuously changing. You know, you got rapid growth of technology, you've got AI. What are your thoughts on how marketing has changed over the last 10 years, where it is today, and where you see it going?
I think the biggest part, and let me just explain that in a way that maybe your listeners are familiar with. For, you know, for a long time, we have what we call a traditional marketing and then digital marketing, mm-hmm. right? And I would say that I was a traditional marketer. So when I started, like print, like a pay media is still a big thing, but they are not integrated. Print is print, pay media is pay media. They are, you know, yes, you can do pay print, but still they are not necessary. You don't treat them the same. You still say print and then you say, you know, TV commercial as a separate a media channel. But I think what has changed is technology plays a critical role for integration. Mm-hmm. And you can say that about, you know, Amazon bookstore and also Barnes & Noble, right? Barnes & Noble was the traditional bookstore, right? So when they're thinking about the book selling, they are not necessarily thinking about how technology can help them or enable them. But when Amazon started selling books, they were thinking about, okay, how can I deliver the books as fast as I can? How can I recommend the books, you know, quickly to the person who just purchased, you know, a book similar to that? Does that make sense? So they were thinking in terms of using technology to accelerate their sales.
Right.
But the traditional bookstore, they didn't think that way. And I want to say the same analogy applies to marketers. Right. For the traditional marketer, we don't think technology first. And I'm not saying technology strategy. That's not my point. Okay. Yeah. We don't think about how to use technology to change something, to accelerate something, to improve something. Because we think about print, we're still thinking about, okay, what's the creative? What's the copy? What's the layout? Right. Mm-hmm. But on the digital, on digital marketing front, what you need to think about is how technology needs to be integrated so that print ad can also apply to a digital or multiple channels simultaneously. And that's what I would, I feel that in the past probably 7 or 8 years, especially after I left Intel, the technology plays even more critical role. And what I have learned working for myself, to be honest with you, is to accelerate that digital ramping and digital learning. Like everything I do has to be digital. But at the same time, how can technology in the back end is integrated? And I don't have like IT person to help me out. And a lot of that I have to figure it out myself. And that was a painful journey by myself. Oh, we'll talk about it over a drink one day.
So where do you think it's going from here? I mean, I know you just wrote the book on the modern AI marketer. So how does artificial intelligence come into marketing?
Yeah. So the next stage or the next phase, and I'm not pretending I have answer. I don't. And I'm not pretending I'm an oracle. I'm not. The thing I can see is the technology plays a critical role now, is going to be even more important in the future. That has a lot to do with the data we've generated. Like how much data we generate every single day, every single second, right? Like literally you click like and shares on your on your Facebook, on LinkedIn, it that piece of data will give marketers or the advertiser a clue, you know, what you like, right? So like if I click over 100 likes today, and I click on, you know, over 200 shares tomorrow or next 2 weeks, all that data has been generated. But what can marketers do to analyze that data to better understand Pam, right? Mm-hmm. So if I click on that just because I like it at that moment, or do I click on that with the intent to purchase in the future, right? If I click on that, is that something I'm interested in? So because there is a lot of factors that play into it, and so much data has been generated just, you know, about Pam. I'm talking one person. I'm not talking 7 billion people on the planet. That to analyze that data, right, it has to come from machine. Mm-hmm. I mean, humans can do some work.
Yeah.
But it has to be the machine take the first step.
Right.
Right. And maybe we can feed into our criteria to it. We can build a model to it. But the machine will need to do that analysis first. Right. So that's where artificial intelligence will come into play. That's because we have so much data and the humans will be overwhelmed. But we still need to analyze the data to understand our audience much better. And that's, I think, moving forward, the AI will be embedded, like the selection algorithm. Is it algorithms that will be embedded into many marketing platforms that we will be using?
And that'll equal more personalized marketing.
Yes. Yeah. That's assumed that AI is doing the right way to personalize us. And then I'm like, oh, Pam just clicked on the meal, a shirt about a 13-year-old. All right, maybe she is, going to someone else's birthday. Or there will be some assumption that AI will need to make, right? And that just, the personalization is great, but I think that assumption needs to, in terms of how that the algorithm needs to be written, mm-hmm. or the codes needs to be written, that one needs to come from human.
Yeah. So. No, that's fascinating. And we could talk all day long about that and what can of worms that opens up.
I know. Yeah.
Okay. So I'm curious because someday I want to write my own book. Not sure, you know.
Yay! What it
is. I know.
Go for it, Mary. Go for it. Make it 2021. Yes, 2020.
I love it.
The second half resolution.
So take me through a book creation process. What do you go somewhere quiet? How do you get the idea? Like, do you start it? Tell me what it goes on.
All right. I drink a lot. I'm kidding. All right. I'm always thinking. This is like hashtag always thinking. All right. And I always thinking like, okay, what are some of the topics I can write? And that has a lot to do with, I don't follow like, oh, what is the popular topics out there? Like, oh, social media, oh, AI, you know, I try to also look at myself and try to understand what my strength and also skill sets and the expertise are. And then I want to write a topic that I can talk about. So a lot of people want to write like a popular topic, you know, great. That's very good. Good for them. And that's one approach, right? Mm-hmm. And the approach I decided to take is what topic that I can talk about. So I started from that. Okay. So that then I start thinking it is like, is there's a gap, right? Is there's like a gap I can fulfill within, you know, the marketing or B2B marketing area. And what I have noticed at that time is there are many content marketing books, but they were not a single book about global content marketing, how to scale content across region. Mm-hmm. So I wrote a book proposal to actually a publisher, and I said, hey, there are many content marketing books, but there's no book about global content marketing. So what do you think? So obviously they want to also have a categories, you know, for that specific category, they want to have a series of books that serve different needs mm-hmm. within, you know, that specific field, for example, content marketing. So I presented, but it's a niche. Mm-hmm. What I have come to realize is that's also a very narrow niche. So if you want to write a book, my advice to you is, you know, not just like figuring out what your expertise, but also find a gap mm-hmm. that's not served in the market. But balance is don't find a very small niche. Right. So initially when I started, eventually that opened up for many, many doors for me.
Right.
But what I have learned over time is the global content marketing, that was such a niche mm-hmm. and only applied to enterprise companies more than, you know, not SMB, not, you know, like startups.
Right.
So when you are looking for a book proposal or book topic, you know, in addition to evaluating what you can write and also find a niche mm-hmm. that's somehow not too big and not too narrow. Okay. So that kind of led to my second book, and I want to write something in terms of how to better support sales team. Mm-hmm. From my perspective, I also feel that's a gap. There's not many books out there to actually tell marketers how to better support sales team. And I debated, to be honest with you, about what that term should be, you know, because in the industry definition of sales enablement is really sales onboarding, sales training. But the way I defined it is how we support sales as a marketer, how we enable sales. So, but there's no like one consolidated, you know, definition about sales enablement. So I used that because mm-hmm. I feel that's a category that has been established.
Right.
Then for AI, it's literally, you know, it's marketing technology and the MarTech. I feel that, again, nobody is writing like AI as a marketer. And I feel that's something I want to address. So I'm always coming from the perspective, if there's a gap out there and can my knowledge and expertise fulfill that gap? So that's one. And to determine the topics. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing is write a book proposal. And I send it to multiple different publishers. And check if they are interested or not. And then if they are, then we started having conversation. Mm-hmm. And then usually the whole writing time, it's about 6 to 9 months. So you really have to buckle down doing mm-hmm. your work. And at the same time, you have to buckle down and write that book. And in a way, I told everybody, it's like you have a 2 full-time jobs. You do.
Yeah.
So you do your full-time jobs during the daytime, and then after dinner, guess what? Instead of watching Netflix, you just have to sit down and write a damn book. And then you just have to do that. And that's usually take about 6 to 9 months. And after that, and during that whole time, if you work with a publisher and you can send them, depending on how you work with them, sometimes they say, okay, send us a final version when you are ready. Mm-hmm. But I have, the way I work with my publisher and is I send like each chapter, you know,
okay,
to them. So I have a framework that's already been built. So they kind of know, they approve my framework. And they know like the table of contents. Mm-hmm. So they just, I send the chapters to them. But before I send the chapter to them, I rewrote every single chapter before I send it to them, probably 9 to 10 times.
Wow.
So when I send it to them, it's pretty buttoned up. Uh-huh. That means the edit is very, it's not, it's, you know, less. Does that make sense?
Yeah, of course.
So
yeah.
I don't write like draft and send it. When I send it, it's literally from my perspective, it's like 80%. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of going back and forth, obviously, and then they usually have a deadline. Like they said, okay, you know what, you're gonna start writing, I want the final draft from you at this date. Mm-hmm. And then of course, you know, like 8 weeks before that, you start losing your hair. You are not sleeping well, and you are taking sleeping pills. And then you're drinking a lot as well, you know, all that stuff. I'm kidding. Every time I say that, everybody was like, do you drink a lot? I was like, no, I don't. When I meet people.
So The books. So are the books for products and revenue, or the books for credibility, or both? Or are they the entry point into a sales pitch to get you the account?
I would say in general, for many B2B marketers or the B2B marketing consultant, any consultants, the book is what I call 1 pound resume. Mm-hmm. It's basically that it shows that you know this subject very well.
Right.
Right. That you know it so well, you are able to write 50,000 words. Yeah. Okay. So in general, on the B2B side of things, I mean, very, very few, like I would say B2B marketing books, like selling like, you know, hundreds, like 10,000 or 15,000. In general, if you sell thousands of like a B2B marketing books, that's pretty good.
Yeah.
And, but of course the marketing part of it is actually very, very important. And, to get the words out there and then actually get people to notice that. And then, so there's a lot of promotion to it. But in general, when people write a book, majority of the authors, they use it, they have a consulting business, then the book is not a primary income, if you will. Sure. It's not like writing, how should I say it?
Nonfiction or something.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. All right, we're switching and going towards social media now. So social media, so challenging to keep up with the trends, to keep with up with all the different platforms that are available today.
Yeah.
For our listeners, do you feel it's better to hone in on one or two channels, or do you think it's better to kind of get your word out and market on many channels?
All right, so to answer that question, I want everybody to understand it depends on your budget.
Mm.
It also depends on your strategy. Okay. Mostly your budget. If you have small budget, my take on this is hung into one or two channels. And, but if you have small budget, but you are willing to put into a lot of hours, then of course, you know, you focus on more channels because you don't know where your customers will come from. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
So there are usually two schools, all right? And there are one school basically say you're homing to one or two, you're doing incredibly well, and that's only, you know, that's one channel you focus on. Like there's a lot of YouTube celebrities. Yeah. Okay, they only focus on YouTube channel. They rarely, you know, do any promotions on Twitter or anywhere else. They really, really focus on YouTube channel. That's because they have subscribers that was already built into it. Mm-hmm. And so you need to determine what works for you. I don't have an answer for it. I'm not gonna provide you a recommendation because I don't know your business.
Yeah.
So my take on this is you have to determine what works for you. I have a friend and he only writes blogs. He knows that his blogs gets attention and he doesn't like to do video. He doesn't like to do podcasts, even though those are very popular medium out there. He only focus on blog. That's it. Okay. So I want to say is, you know, if you hone into one or two channels, they are success case studies out there and you have to determine what actually works for you. For me specifically, I try all the channels and there are reasons behind it. And I want to tell you why, Mary. So I'm on LinkedIn, I'm on YouTube, I'm on Instagram, I'm on Pinterest, I'm like on Facebook, not just a Facebook business page. I have Facebook community as well. Mary, join my Facebook community, please.
I will. And then we're connected on LinkedIn, Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. And so I have Twitter. So if you think about it, I have like 6 or 7 channels out there. And I also write my blog post, right? The reason I do all that is because I am a marketer. If I'm going to tell my clients, you know, like, okay, I want to give some feedback and insight in terms of their podcast or their YouTube channels or their video scripts or their podcast script, I want to make sure that I actually had done it.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
So I want, and I come to realize it was a painful lesson for me to learn as well. Like the video script, podcast script, and the blog, the writing styles and the opening and the endings are very different. Even for the same topic, right? Like the same topic, like all of a sudden you translate that or convert into a podcast or to a video, they are very, very different type of writing. So when I did trying to make the transition, or I tested the podcast out initially, I want to tell you that my first 50 episodes, I sucked. I have to tell you, I sucked. Guys, if you really want to and see how bad I was, go listen to my episode one. You're going to laugh so hard. Okay, long story short. And that's because I write my podcast script just like the way I write my blog post. That was dumb. Right?
Yeah.
And I was just like, I write it and I'm just like, I was like, oh, repurposing content. No. It took me like 50 episodes to figure out, you know what? I need to write a little bit differently.
Yeah.
And then when I crossed to creating the video myself, and then again, you know, I kind of went through that kind. I learned from my podcast, and I was like, okay, I need to write my video a little bit differently than the podcast, you know? So I come to realize for me, to actually have multiple channels, and it's probably on surface look like, you know, I'm very, very like broad, but my objectives is actually to learn how each channel works. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it totally.
So
makes sense.
From that objective, I try many things, but if I could just focus on one or two, I would literally focus on blog and the podcast because I think that's the two I really enjoy the most. But unfortunately, I have to understand many channels. Also, I have to understand the content production side of things. So I try many things and just trying to get myself well-rounded and educated.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. And it's so time-consuming. So I don't know when
you... Oh, yeah. Talk to me about that, man. So much work. People don't understand that digital marketing is so much work.
It really is. It totally is. And one of the biggest challenges with marketing, digital marketing, all marketing really, is showing ROI. What's the advice? What's the secret sauce? What's your recommendation for showing ROI on marketing?
Okay. So the most important things is you have to determine your KPI. Right? What's your key performance indicator? How are you going to measure the success of your marketing campaigns? That's one thing you have to decide. Nobody can tell you how you're going to measure your own success. You are the one who have to make that decision. Is it based on number of leads? Is it based on how many, you know, views? Is it based on how many, you know, hot leads that you pass to sales team? Whatever that is, right? You have to decide what that is. Okay. Then the second thing from what I have learned working for myself is your back end needs to be integrated. Whatever you decide your measurement is, you need to make sure you have a process, and you also need to make sure you have like the tools and technology that's built up to actually track that. So initially I was like, oh, you know what? I want to, you know, increase leads by 50%, or I want to increase my pipeline. But you know what? I did not really have my process was pretty fragmented. It was very hard for me to track. Right. So whatever you decide to do, if you want to quantify your ROI, set up your goal, you know, whatever your goals are, you know, and then second thing is set up a process to actually be able to monitor and track that goal. And by the way, those two are not easy things to do.
Right.
For me, I change my KPI every single year. That's because I have grown, or my tools have grown, or my value proposition has grown, or my business model has changed. So in the past 6 years, every single year, my KPI is different, right? And the people who were supporting me was like, Pam, I don't understand. I was like, you know what? Let me explain to you why. That's because I'm still growing. I'm still morphing, right? And I offer different services, and that's why, you know, my KPI needs to change on a regular basis, on annual basis, if you will.
God, I'm having fun talking to you. Okay. So I'm thinking of my audience, and, you know, they're career minded. They're, you know, say they're interested in marketing, but there's field marketing, channel marketing, partner marketing, outbound, yes, global definitely. Campaigns, always yes, on direct yes. marketing, account-based marketing, product. I mean, what should someone do if they're young looking to go into marketing? be well diversified, try to hone in on one. I mean, not everyone's going to have the benefit of working for a big organization.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And being able to do rotations.
Yes.
So
yes.
From a strategic mindset, from a career, what would you recommend?
You know, if you are young and beautiful, okay?
Keyword young.
All right, young. Yeah, the keyword is young, okay? Young and ambitious. How does that sound?
Yeah.
Okay, if you are young, okay, and you are just tapping to this field specifically, like mm-hmm. either by accident or by your passion or by your study, I would suggest that you try as many fields as possible. Mm-hmm. Because like now, I mentor many young and seasoned marketing professionals. And for young, seriously, I call them aspiring marketing professionals, even I explain very clearly, at least from my perspective, clearly what co-marketing is, what direct marketing is, what indirect sales force is, what direct sales force is, you know, they don't understand. Just like when somebody explained that to me the first day I started the marketing job, they would explain that to me. I was like, huh? I would try to pretend I understand, yeah. but I seriously don't. So my recommendation for if you just whatever job you are at, you know, take on as many responsibilities as possible, right? If you work for a small company, you know, the rotation itself is you wear multiple hats.
Right.
Right. If the company needs to email marketing support, well, go make that happen. Right. If the company needs somebody supporting sales, well, go make that happen. Try it. Okay. Once you start trying different things, you will start realizing what you like to do and what you don't like to do. So my take on this is just try different things. And then that's probably going to be the case in the first 5 or 6 years, you know, when you started in the marketing, doing the marketing jobs.
Yeah. I mean, for me, you know, I had my business first and did that for 16 years. And then I went to go work for corporate America. I think my business would have flourished so much more had I gone to corporate America, kind of got my education first on
I actually agree with that.
And then go start my own business. Like, I think I could have ramped so much
quicker. So much faster.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So that, I actually, you know, Mary, to some extent, I agree with that assessment. I mean, if there are listeners, you guys are on the agency side, you know, you learn so much on the agency side as well. But I always encourage people on the agency side actually crossed.
Yeah.
And to go to the corporate side and work in the enterprise actually for several years because it's a completely different world. I learned so much on the enterprise side, to be honest with you, even though I was never on the agency side. Mm-hmm. But if you think about it, I'm an agency anyway.
Right.
But the reason I can still work with the enterprise clients is because I know them so well.
Yes.
I was in that side for 20 years. You know, the global enterprise, they are very similar. When you work for Intel, when you talk to Cisco, HP, Dell, IBM, you know what? Very similar type of organizational structure, and they talk very similarly.
Yeah.
And then you can carry that conversation very quickly because you were actually in the corporate side for a long time.
Totally agree. So why did you leave corporate America?
I love Intel with passion, and I was there for 19 years and had a great time. And I think it has a lot to do with age. It's I call it midlife crisis. You know, I didn't have an affair, or I didn't buy a red car. It's more kind of like, you know, your heart. It's just you changed. That's the only thing I'm saying, right? It's like a certain like after like 19 years, I look at myself in the mirror every day when I was working in a big corporation. So I don't think it's that fun anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's like you're looking at yourself and you just feel like, okay, this is not what I'm enjoying doing anymore. And I want to do something different. And I think at a time, my husband was like, so does that mean like you don't want to work Intel? And I was like, well, what about HP? What about Dell? What about IBM? I was like, that sounds great, but is that same shit, different days? Yeah. I was like, but anyway, long story short, I gave a lot of thoughts. I didn't I didn't leave right away. And when I had thought about I need to do something different until I pulled the trigger, that was about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I gave a lot of thoughts in terms of what I want to do next. And I know for sure I'm not going to another corporation. If I do want to go to another corporation, I might as well just stay where I was, because it's not like I was pushed out. It's not like I was not having a good time. I think I did pretty well. I was well respected. So, I just want to do something different. And I did not know what that is. And also it's to the point I feel like, hey, maybe I should do something for myself. I always want to write a book. I always want to share some of my learning. And maybe I'll do that. And that's how everything got started. And it was very hard, to be honest with you, Mary. I mean, you were on the other side for 16 years. Yeah. So it's actually pretty hard. And I worked nonstop 24/7 in the past 6 years, I have to tell. And I have people come to me and say, I want to do what you do. I was like, don't. It's too much work.
No, and I thoroughly admit that. I think when I had my own business, I worked harder than I've ever worked in my life.
Yeah, it is. And everybody was like, you know what? I was like, you know what? Perception is not reality. Yeah. I did travel around the world. I loved it. And I speak in multiple different countries. I loved it. I do a lot of training. I loved it. There's a lot of, I do have the freedom. Mm-hmm. Okay. But at the same time, you always worry about your pipelines. You always worry about your business. You always worry about growth. You always worry about, okay, how can I, if you have IT challenges, you're like, how can I solve that problem? So there's always something.
You know, but one good thing I think is while I am in corporate America, I don't feel that golden handcuff because I know I can make it on my own. Because I've made it on my own. So there's that different mentality. Some people can't see themselves
outside of that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so, you know, I kind of feel bad for people who can't see themselves out of a world where they've spent 25 years or 20 years. It's like, there's just so much, but you know, I could be a florist tomorrow and think that would be an amazing job.
That'll be okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Yeah. So it took me a while. I mean, when I left, I was in corporate for 19 years, right? I mean, if you think about it, it was like, okay. So it was pretty comfortable there. And now all of a sudden, I'm going to jump off the cliff without parachute. Oh my God. It was scary. And I always had self-doubt the first 2 years. I always feel like, you know what? There's no way I can make it. There's no way I can make it. There's no way I can make it. It's like literally into probably the fourth or fifth years. And I look at myself one day, I was like, you know what? You'll be okay, Pam. You'll be okay.
Yeah. So how did you tell yourself when you heard that self-doubt in your head? How did you tell yourself, buck up and keep doing husband, it?
My husband was like, do you want to go back to corporate? I was like, oh, nope. Not really. Okay, then buckle down and do whatever you have to do. Okay. Tears in my eyes, but I'm still doing this stuff. You know how it is. So.
Okay. So just a couple more questions. What or who has been your biggest inspiration?
Actually, there's one, David Ogilvy. You know, who actually founded the Ogilvy agency. Mm-hmm. And I read his book, and he was a copywriter, and he was a great copywriter. And, being a copywriter and be able to build a business like that way back then, I think that was pretty impressive. And I wrote his book, and he writes very, very well. Mm-hmm. I think I have this affinity to actually admire people that who can write very well. Mm-hmm. and he is the one that, not that I don't think I will ever be, you know, to achieve that kind of caliber, but I really, really enjoy reading his books, and also like in terms of what he has done, and a lot of things that he was talking about even way back then is he has data to support. Like when he write copies, it's not just writing copy for the sake of writing copy, right? And that he actually do focus group testing. He has research to support what words actually, you know, will resonate. And everything that he does actually is really have a direct ties with the sales. And I like that a lot.
Yeah, that's a good one. Okay, so what does to be bolder mean to you?
Try something or do something that you have never done before. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean it's for me. It's not like, oh, you know what? Jump off the cliff. That's not what I'm talking about. It's really kind of expand my skill set and always trying to learn something and then test something like that I have never done before. Like before, I did not know anything about CIM. My job did not require me to do that. Then I bought Salesforce, I learned, and I tried to connect, you know, the marketing automation tool to the CIM, and I really tried to learn that. So it just, for me, it's the continuous learning. Mm-hmm. It's like, try to do something that you have never done before. I mean, job-wise, so.
Yeah, I love it. What's next for Pam? Where do you see yourself in 5 years?
Well, next for me, get through COVID-19 in one piece.
I know, gosh. I think that's on the list of everyone.
Oh, my God. I would like to write probably a couple more books, to be honest with you. And I don't know what the topics I want to write just yet. And I want to structure. I think, you know, it's 5 years from now, increase revenues, grow my companies. Actually not. What I really want to do is I want to structure like some of my learning in the past 6 years. And then how I made that transition from like traditional marketer to like a full digital marketers. I kind of want to structure that learning and structure that knowledge share with the people who are interested in the marketing field, or even share with the people who would like to make that transition, you know, from corporate to kind of like be independent. So that's actually one thing I kind of want to do.
I love it.
Yeah. So
I love it. I love it. Well, I have absolutely loved talking with you.
It was a lot of fun, Mary. I'm sorry. I'm a little crazy.
How can people get in touch with you?
All right. Every single media channel, a social media channel, I promise I'm on it. But you can always come to my website, pamdinner.com, and get in touch with me. And also you can Twitter, LinkedIn. I'm checking on that all the time. So if you want to talk to me, want to reach out, just, you can reach out. Just Google me. You'll find a way.
Thank you so much. Have an awesome day.
Thank you so much. Bye, Mary.
Bye. Thanks for listening to the episode today. It was really fun chatting with my guest. If you liked our show, please like it and share it with your friends. If you want to learn what we're up to, please go check out our website at 2bbolder.com. That's the number 2, little b, bolder.com.